Dedicate today's shiur to Mrs. Mitgang, whose first yard site was this week. Leah Devora Bas Yosef Halevi, her yard site was on Yud Gimel Cheshvan, and her children have asked that we dedicate all the shiurim this week in her memory. She was definitely a very, very special woman, and when we study Pirkei Avos, I think there's nothing that's more appropriate to dedicate in her memory than our study of Pirkei Avos, which is so much of what she lived. So, much to my surprise, when we had the summer shiurim that focused on Pirkei Avos, I thought we were going to finish the whole Pirkei Avos in 6 weeks. Little did I know that we were only going to finish one Mishnah in 6 weeks. Like my father has told me on many occasions, it's Hiskula fa'arichas yamim. You know, you live forever. If you only learn one Mishnah in 6 weeks, I guess God has to give you more years to finish the rest. So, halavai, we should all have the opportunity to study many more Mishnayos together. And to have many opportunities to learn Torah with each other. So we got up to Mishnah Beis, and I realized nobody has a Pirkei Avos, which is okay. I'll say it outside. And what we're going to study today is something that I think is an important lesson, not only for leadership, but also an important lesson for parenting. I don't know how many people here are still parenting their own children. I don't know if that job ever ends. But I, as a father of young children, think very much about parenting and about how we are best going to educate our children, how we are best going to be able to transmit the values that are dear to us to our children, and to figure out how to do it in the most effective way. And I think here we have something that gives us an opportunity to focus on that a little bit, even though it's from an unlikely source, but it's something that gives us a perspective, and you'll see in a few minutes exactly what we mean. Mishnah Beis in Pirkei Avos begins with the following name: Shimon HaTzadik Haya Mishiyare Knesses HaGedola. We spoke a couple of months ago about who the Anshe Knesses HaGedola were, a very important group of Jewish leaders. But Shimon HaTzadik was the last of the group of the Anshe Knesses HaGedola. That's why he's referred to as Shiyare Knesses HaGedola. Shiyare means the leftovers, the last one. So Shimon HaTzadik was from the last people from that group of Knesses HaGedola. And Shimon HaTzadik had tremendous leadership. As we'll see in a few minutes, his leadership was one that we should learn from, and his leadership was one which was very strong and extremely effective. Sometimes, unfortunately, we know it takes the loss of a great person for us to fully appreciate how great they actually were. And we know this true in life. If we have parents or grandparents or loved ones who we had the opportunity to be exposed to all the time, sometimes it's only upon their demise that we're able to fully appreciate what they really meant to us, and what they were for the generation or for the family unit as a whole. Well, the Gemara says the same thing about Shimon HaTzadik. Shimon HaTzadik was the Kohen Gadol who had the most effective leadership, as he was the one who led the charge in the Beis HaMikdash in his generation before the Churban. Shimon HaTzadik was an extremely effective leader, and so important that after his death, we finally understood how great a leader he was. Why? Says the Gemara, because in his day, everything in the Beis HaMikdash seemed to have went very smoothly. The obvious presence of the Shekhinah was felt by everyone. All you needed to do was come to the Beis HaMikdash, and you understood that we have a job to do here. You understood that this is where God's presence resides. You understood that everything that went on in his days was in its most elevated, in its most glorious state, because he was running it. For example, the Gemara says a few examples, but one of them was the highlight of all of the service in the Beis HaMikdash was on Yom HaKippurim. And we have an extensive tefillah that we say on Yom Kippur and Musaf about the description of what the Kohen Gadol used to do when he went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And we say one of the most meaningful prayers that we say is the description of the face, of the shine of the face of the Kohen Gadol as B'tseiso Mibeis Kodesh HaKadoshim, when he comes out from the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and he shows everyone that his tefillah was effective and his offering and his service was one that gained atonement for the Jewish people. So that is the job that Shimon HaTzadik held with such grandeur and such a majestic following that he had in the days that he led the charge in the Beis HaMikdash. And the Gemara says that every year on Yom Kippur, they used to tie a red string onto the neck of the animal, and after they would throw it off the cliff, they would wait with great anticipation to see whether or not miraculously that red string would turn white. Everybody's familiar with that? Not sure. But the Gemara says that that's what used to be done every year. And that was a sign, if the red string turned white, it was a sign that God had granted an atonement for the Jewish people. That was the miracle. The reason why God did it was to show them clearly that He accepted all their prayers and He accepted their tshuva on Yom HaKippurim. Every year that Shimon HaTzadik did the service in the Beis HaMikdash, which was 40 years, it's a long time, the Gemara says there was not a year that he did the service that the red string did not turn white. All in his merit. All because of him. And after his death, suddenly, that was not to be expected any longer. And the Gemara says, in the days of Shimon HaTzadik, the light on the menorah always continued to burn throughout the night. Never did it have to be relit. There was always one candle, the Ner Ma'aravi. And the Gemara tells us, because of the merit of Shimon HaTzadik, because of who he was, never did they have to relight the candle on the Ner Ma'aravi, on that candle on the menorah that was supposed to continue to be lit throughout the night. It always continued to stay lit. Shimon HaTzadik, in his days, the Gemara says, the Mizbeach always had a fire that just continued to burn on its own. And there wasn't effort that was necessary or required of the Kohanim to keep that fire going. Again, many different things that the Gemara points out all happen in the merit of the great leadership of Shimon HaTzadik. But after he died, they finally realized how great he really was. Because after he died, no longer did they have that experience, and no longer did the Beis HaMikdash run in the way it used to. Probably one of the most defining or famous moments of leadership of the life of Shimon HaTzadik was when he interacted with Alexander the Great. I've always found it unusual that generally we try to give our children Jewish names. Yosef, Shimon, Chaya, Sarah, right? We have all kinds of Jewish names. I don't know what they are, but everybody has their own variations of Jewish names. Isn't it strange that Alexander somehow, it's a clearly secular name, but somehow it crept in for generations to become an accepted Jewish name? It's a very strange phenomenon, and I always wondered, how did that happen? Well, here's the story. The Gemara Maseches Yuma tells an amazing story. The Gemara tells us about the Shomronim. The Shomronim were a group of individuals who lived in Eretz Yisrael, who were very upset by the fact that the Beis HaMikdash was the position of power of the Jewish people. They were upset that Shimon HaTzadik was running a Beis HaMikdash in the way that he did, and they were trying whatever they could to destroy it. They didn't want the mantle of leadership being given in the hands of Shimon HaTzadik and his contemporaries. They wanted a very different style of leadership that should be for the Jewish people. So the Shomronim had a great idea. They go to the enemy and they say, "Are you willing to sell us 5 measures of land?" I don't know how much each measure was, but let's say 5 acres of land. "Are you willing to sell us for an exorbitant amount of money that we're willing to pay?" Alexander the Great, who was on the other side, says, "Hey, that sounds like an interesting idea. Why shouldn't we take the money, sell them a few pieces of land? What does it bother us if we give them a little bit of Eretz Yisrael?" Well, he didn't realize that he had sold them the Har HaBayis. He didn't realize that that's what they were trying to get at. They tried to couch it and say, "You know, we want to buy 5 acres of land from here to there." They didn't explain that the reason why they wanted is because once we own the Beis HaMikdash, we can destroy the Beis HaMikdash and we can topple the mantle of leadership of the Jewish people. Well, that's what happened. He signs a contract, he goes through with the deal, and he sells these acres of land to the Shomronim. Okay, word gets to Shimon HaTzadik that you're about to be destroyed. The Beis HaMikdash will be destroyed. Your people will be thrown out of Yerushalayim. This is going to be the end. And Shimon HaTzadik is beside himself. He can't believe it. So he takes the Yakire Yerushalayim. Shimon HaTzadik gets all the Kohanim and all of the leaders of the city of Yerushalayim. And they all go out with a mass entourage to go and greet Alexander the Great and negotiate with him to see what he can do. Upon seeing the face of Shimon HaTzadik, we're told in the Gemara, he saw such an angelic, such a pure face of Shimon HaTzadik, and he says, "This saint is coming out to greet me." And it says that Alexander the Great almost falls off of his horse, which you have to understand, he was the most powerful person in the world at the time. And he says, "You are the face that has such an impression on me. Just by looking at you, I'm so overwhelmed. I'm so overcome with emotion. What is it that I can do for you?" Alexander the Great says, "I don't think you understand. You've almost destroyed the Jewish people and you don't even realize." He says, "What happened?" He says, "Well, you just sold the Beis HaMikdash, the property of the Beis HaMikdash, to the Shomronim, and they're going to destroy all of us." Well, Alexander the Great says, "I'm going to cancel the deal. And he does whatever it takes. Alexander the Great canceled it, and that was the great leadership of Shimon HaTzadik. As a result, the Ravid, one of the great Rishonim, quotes from Josephus, he said, I don't know anything about reading Josephus, I've never done it, but basically he quotes from Josephus that the story didn't end there. Alexander the Great was very proud of the fact that he now saved the Jewish community and that Shimon HaTzadik was on his side. So he goes to Shimon HaTzadik, he says, you know, I think I deserve something for what I've done. Shimon HaTzadik says, you certainly do. Well, Alexander the Great says, I'd like that you put up a memorial in the Beis HaMikdash, a bust of me, Alexander the Great, right next to the Mizbeach. This way everybody will know that I was the reason why the Beis HaMikdash was saved, why the Jewish community is still here. So I'd like you to put up a memorial for me, a statue of my figure, that everybody should be reminded every time they come to visit that Alexander the Great is the reason why you are still here. Well, Shimon HaTzadik unabashedly says back to him, I'm sorry, but we cannot put a statue in the Beis HaMikdash. That won't look so good. Which, number one, I think is an important piece of information, that we're told that Shimon HaTzadik wasn't ready to give all kinds of excuses. He said it like it is. We have an Isser, Lo Sase Lecha Fesel, we're not allowed to make an Avodah Zarah, we're not allowed to make a statue. And he told Alexander the Great, as much as I'm grateful to you, I cannot break my principles. This is not something I'm willing to do. Even though we're grateful to you for saving us and for sparing the Jewish people and the Beis HaMikdash, but I cannot allow for that to happen. Well, Shimon HaTzadik comes up with a better idea, and he says, the idea that I have is something that is going to give you more honor than anything else that you've asked for. And that is, he said, any child that will be born this year in Yerushalayim will be named Alexander. We will all name our children after you. And from there started the tradition of Alexander, which is a clearly secular name, becoming part of the Jewish tradition of names. And it's a very legitimate name that's given over the last many, many centuries because of that original story of Shimon HaTzadik and Alexander the Great. An amazing story. But that was probably the greatest point of his leadership of Shimon HaTzadik, was the fact that he saved the Jewish people from an imminent destruction of the Beis HaMikdash and from being thrown out of Yerushalayim. So as we said, Shimon HaTzadik was an incredible leader. He was an important person. What I'd like to do this morning with the time that we have is to study two very benign or seemingly benign passages that the Gemara shares with us about Shimon HaTzadik and understand the lesson that we can take out of them. And it's, again, a very unlikely source, but Rav Soloveitchik, in two very different contexts, explained an important message that can be learned from each of these very simple stories. So we begin with story number one. And that is, if you look at line number one on the source sheet, and we're not going to read all of this, we'll skip around a little, that's why I put numbers to the lines, but you can read it all in the totality on your own later. So let us begin as follows. Tana Rabbanan. The Gemara says, every year Shimon HaTzadik used to go into the Beis HaMikdash on Yom HaKippurim, and the highlight of his experience was that he would go in to the Kodesh HaKadashim. The job of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur is he has to offer the Ketores in the Kodesh HaKadashim, and that's what he would do. And as he would come out, he would share the fact that he felt confident in the service that he did in the Kodesh HaKadashim. Says the Gemara, Tana Rabbanan, that year, Osa Shana Shemezva Shimon HaTzadik, the year that Shimon HaTzadik died, Amar Lahem, he comes out of the Kodesh HaKadashim after he's finished with his service on Yom Kippur, and he says to all those who were gathered, B'shanazu animes. This year I'm going to die. I'm not going to make it through the year. Amrulo, everyone turns back to him and says, Shimon HaTzadik, you're an old man, you've been around 40 years, you're pretty healthy. Minayin atayodea. Why do you get the feeling that this year you're going to die? Why do you get the feeling you're not going to make it through another year? We want you to lead us next Yom Kippur as you've done with distinction for the last 40 years. Amar Lehem, he says, I'll tell you why I have this feeling. B'chol Yom HaKippurim, every year when I go into the Kodesh HaKadashim on Yom Kippur, Hayim Izdamin Li Zaken Echad. There was an elderly looking gentleman who wore beautiful, clean, white clothing, and he always walked in with me. This year, unfortunately, says Shimon HaTzadik, when I walked in to do the service, the same elderly gentleman was there, but he was wearing black clothing, and he had a black veil over his face, Shimon HaTzadik said, I know something's wrong. And I know that means this year I'm not going to make it through the year. Now don't get any pretenses. Don't think if you have such a dream it means anything. Don't worry. If you have nightmares tonight, it's only because of what we said today. It's nothing to do with anything. The Gemara says, HaChalomos Shav Yidaberu. What you see in a dream is nothing. Don't worry about dreams. We have an idea, we have a concept of Hatavas Chalom. Right, there is such an idea. So the Chazon Ish said, if you're afraid of it, then you do that. If you ignore it, nothing to worry about. So I was raised, my father's a big Litvak. So I was raised, don't worry about such things. My father always told us the story about Reb Chaim Volozhiner, that he was also, he was a student of the Vilna Gaon, and the story goes that some member of the community in Volozhin came to Reb Chaim Volozhiner one day. He said, you know, I had a terrible dream last night. He said, what happened? He says, you know, every day I go to work, and in order to get to my office or wherever my factory is, I have to cross over a small river. I take a raft every day. I go over the river. I take the bridge, whatever it is, and I get to the other side, and I go to my office to do the work that I have to do. He says, I had a dream last night that I was going over that river, and the bridge collapsed as I was walking over it, and I drowned. So Reb Chaim Volozhiner said, I don't think you have anything to worry about. You should go to work, don't worry about it. Anyway, he was afraid, he didn't go. That night he went to sleep, he has the same dream again. He comes back to Reb Chaim Volozhiner, he says, you know, I had a dream again, a second time, that I was crossing that bridge over the water, and as I was walking over the bridge collapsed and I fell into the water, and I'm afraid to go to work. He says, stop worrying, dreams don't mean anything. Anyway, the third day he goes to work, and lo and behold, he's crossing over the bridge, and as he's walking over it, the bridge collapses and he dies. So during the Shiva, everyone was wondering, what's Reb Chaim Volozhiner going to say now? His children are now, unfortunately, without a father. And everybody knew the story that he came to discuss it with Reb Chaim Volozhiner. He told him that he should not worry about the dream. So Reb Chaim Volozhiner walked in, and the first thing he said to the family is, if your father would come to me today and tell me he had the same dream, I would say, ignore it again. If it was his time to die, it's his time to die. It's nothing to do with the dream. So that was his perspective. I don't know. That's the way I was raised. Dreams don't mean anything. And even if something ends up happening that has a relation to the dream, don't worry about it. So don't worry about the story here. But Shimon HaTzadik basically said, take it or leave it, Shimon HaTzadik said that he went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. I'm not advocating either way. But it says he went in and every year he saw this elderly gentleman who accompanied him, who walked in with him, and he was wearing these beautiful white clothing that were very full of light. And this year he says, I had a very gloomy experience. And I had the same person who walked in with me every other year, but this year he was wearing dark clothing and his face was covered over with a black veil. Something's wrong. Says the Gemara, he was right. 7 days after Yom Tov, Shimon HaTzadik dies. He was right. So, sounds like a very simple story. But that's what the Gemara says. That's the end of the story. Rav Soloveitchik says this is not just a story. There's something beneath the surface of this story that's a very important lesson. Skip to line 23. Shimon HaTzadik shebiyamav higia hakuhuna hagadola lemarom tifarto. Shimon HaTzadik lived at a time when the institution of being the Kohen Gadol, when the institution of a Beis HaMikdash was at its pinnacle, it was at its peak. There was never a time when it was as majestic as the time that he led the Beis HaMikdash. L'rosh piskas hoda v'si kedushasa. This was the most glorious, majestic period in Jewish history. V'sheba avodaso samal. Whenever Shimon HaTzadik did his job in the Beis HaMikdash, it exemplified the hod tiferes v'hadar avodas HaMikdash. It was able to bring out the splendor and the beauty of what it means to have a Beis HaMikdash. Hirgish b'shanam ha'achrono shel kuhunaso. As much as Shimon HaTzadik was leading a beautiful Beis HaMikdash, he knew, lurking in the back of his mind, he knew that there was a churban that was imminent. He knew the Jewish people are about to go into galus. He knew that we were going to have a destruction of a Beis HaMikdash, a destruction of all of society in Israel because we were going to be exiled out of the land. He knew that was coming. And although he went and did his job with distinction every day and every Yom Kippur, and he did exactly what he was supposed to do, he knew, lurking in the back of his mind, that there was going to be a problem. He knew we are coming upon cloudy and gloomy days for the Jewish people. And it was discouraging. And it was a somber time for him. Skip down to the next paragraph, line 43. Shimon HaTzadik Shanasham Bechayav Masos Nefesh Ha'am Biyachas Lahod Viziv HaKuhuna HaGedola. Shimon HaTzadik, who always brought a festive and bright light to the Jewish people, he always gave them hope. And he always made them feel that God accepted their prayers and God loved them. That was his job as a leader. Shimon HaTzadik always did that. But he sees in the back of his mind, it's not always going to be this way. And he thinks to himself, maybe I am the last Kohen Gadol who will ever do service in the Beis HaMikdash. Maybe I'm the last person who's ever going to have the experience that we all are able to have when the Beis HaMikdash is in its full function. And he was worried. And he was concerned. Skip down to line 60. I know we're not reading anything. But skip down to line 60. Biram. With all of that lurking in the back of his mind, and with all of his concerns, Kishahaya nichnas biyom kippurim l'kodesh hakadashim. Every year when it came time for him to do his job in the Kodesh HaKadashim, Hayam isgaber al osim hasveikos v'harehurim. He put all of those negative thoughts aside. Mare Kodesh HaKadashim hayam mashra alav ruach tikva v'ometz halev ki am Yisrael chai. When he went to do his job, when he went to represent the Jewish people in the Kodesh HaKadashim, he was always positive. He was always forward-thinking. And he always put all of the negativity aside. And he said to himself, I believe, as much as I am afraid that it's not going to be the reality, I still have a firm belief that maybe God will save His people, that maybe God will spare His Beis HaMikdash, that maybe God will allow us to continue to do the service as we've been doing it. And he always sees, symbolically, he always sees how the person walks in with him to the Kodesh HaKadashim with the pure white clothing, optimistically. That's always the perspective that he had walking in to do his service. Always had that aspiration and that hope, the confidence that things would be okay. That was what the picture of that white gentleman walking in with him every year represented. However, Baram, skip to the next page, line 94. Bishana ha'achrona, it came to that last year of his leadership. Gal shel tuga tzaf al Shimon HaTzadik. All of a sudden he has this gloomy overcast as he's walking in to do his service. Ke'en avelus takfa alav. He has a feeling like this is it. And he's no longer optimistic about the future. Hamatzius ha'achzaras amda l'neged eina v'lo zazam emekoma. He couldn't get it out of his mind. And he sees the imminent threat. Uvishasha nichnas l'fnai v'lefnim. This time when he goes into the Kodesh HaKadashim, machshava ayuma mavrika b'mocho. He has this tremendous fear in his mind. Ulai hinani ha'koin ha'gadol ha'acharon ha'nichnas l'beis Kodesh HaKadashim. Maybe I'm really the last one who's going to have this opportunity. And he starts to get disheartened. And he becomes cynical and morose because he believes this is it. Upis Om. Skip down to the next paragraph, line 118. As he's having that feeling, Ra'a zakein lavush shchorim v'atuf shchorim es Yisrael saba atuf v'lavush shchorim. As he's thinking all of this in his mind, all he can see is the same person who came in with him every year, but that person is dressed in black. Pisom hofia lefanav asido shel hazaken. And he understands that that represents the future of this old tradition that was represented in this old man. Mu'urafa lemu'unan. It would be a time when it would be foggy for the Jewish people. Afkav or lo chada ilav mitoch av ha'anan. There would be no light for the Jewish people. Ve'osa zaken nichnes imo v'lo yatza. That old man with the dark clothing stayed with him the entire time. And Shimon HaTzadik, therefore, when he comes out, skip to line 128. Kishayatza amar lachaveira, when he comes out from that experience that year, he says to his friends, Hashana animes. What does he mean, Hashana animes? Says Rav Soloveitchik. What does he mean, this year I'm going to die? Says Rav Soloveitchik, what it means is, Ein li rishus l'shamesh b'kuhuna gedola. If my perspective as I lead the Jewish people is one of pessimism, is one of a dark future, is one of where I don't believe there can ever be hope any longer, Shimon HaTzadik says, I am no longer qualified to be the leader of the Jewish people. I cannot be the leader if I don't believe in their future. How can I lead a people if I don't believe that there's anything to lead? If I don't believe there's a goal and there's a purpose? How can I be Eini Rishus L'Shamesh B'Kuhuna Gedola Leo Shliach HaKnesses Yisrael Lefnai V'Lefnim? How can I be the one to represent them in front of God when I don't believe that there is anything positive that will come from the future of the Jewish people? And therefore he says, Yavo Acher V'Yishamesh Tachtai. Take me out of this position and put someone else in. Because a leader is never allowed to give up. A leader is never allowed to have a negative perspective. It just doesn't work. You cannot lead if that's the feeling you're going to have. Says Rav Soloveitchik, Gam Achshav, line 135. Morai Verabosa, he's talking to a generation of Jews in the 50s and the 60s when life was difficult. It was not in style to be an Orthodox Jew at all, even within the Jewish community. And he says, Mara Shchova Va'atzvus Nara Lefrakim Tokefes Oleinu. There are times when we see only a dark future for the Jewish people. There are times when we say to ourselves, what is the future going to bring? And I ask myself every day, what is going to be the future for my children? With all the technology, and I'm just as guilty, but technology is only going to get worse. And life is only going to become more busy and more challenging and more complicated, and we're going to have more responsibility as the world continues to quickly develop as quickly as it is. And we say to ourselves, what's going to be? How are we ever going to raise children effectively in another 10 years, let alone today? Says Rav Soloveitchik, we have times in our lives when we feel this way, when we are afraid. And it overtakes us sometimes. Aval, he says, Aser lanu liros es Yisrael saba b'demus zakein atuf shcharim v'lavu shcharim. We never have the right as leaders to have that perspective. And I think he's talking to leaders, but it's really a question for all parents. Do we have hope and do we have belief in our own children? And as a leader, we never have the right to give up on our children. We never have a right to give up on those who follow us. It's an important piece, it's an important message. But Rav Soloveitchik says this is something he learned from the story of Shimon HaTzadik. The Gemara is not just telling us a story that he knew with a prophecy that he was going to die. Shimon HaTzadik taught us that if your entire life you live always seeing the person with the white, clean clothing and you always feel there's a bright future and you think there can be a continuation for whatever it is that you're leading and you're doing, that's the only way to be successful. And the moment a person is overcome by that black picture in your mind, the moment that you cannot take that away from your perspective, you have to hand over the mantle of leadership to someone else. Because that is leadership that will never be effective. I read an article in Forbes magazine a while ago about how much optimistic leaders are able to be more successful in business and in their leadership than ones who are pessimists. And they explain a whole body of research why this is the case. A lot of it makes logical sense. Basically, one of the things they said is because when you live through a recession, let's say you live through a time like that, a depression. So if you own a company, you own a business, and you're watching the stock market and you see everything's crashing, you have two options. You can say, well, close up shop because there's going to be no future. And there's no point of continuing to employ all these people. What are we going to do? An optimistic leader finds new ways in which they can be creative to make new businesses out of the ones that they already had. You think creatively about, look, I'm not giving up, and therefore, if I have all these people on staff, we'll go into a new line of business, we'll figure something else out. An optimistic leader sometimes is able to be far more creative in the way they come up with new ideas of how they can be successful and how those who they lead can be successful. And they go on to explain a number of reasons in which Logically, it makes sense that an optimistic leader is able to lead far more effectively than others. Just think about it. An optimistic person is able to communicate messages far better than somebody who's a pessimist. All of us want satisfaction in life. All of us want happiness in life. If we have a person who comes and shares messages with us that are always negative, that never make us happy or fulfilled, why would we want to follow such a person? Why would we want to lead a life that person is leading? If we show the beauty and the positive perspective that we feel life can actually have, obviously we will have an easier time having our followers listen to us because our messages will be communicated far more effectively. And I think this is not only in business and it's not only in leadership, but every parent and every grandparent is a leader in their own way as well. And we need to show our children that as much as we have concerns and as much as we might be nervous, and trust me, I'm as nervous as everybody else is, we need to show them that we do believe that elderly gentleman that represents our tradition for thousands of years is still wearing the white clothing. And we do believe that there will be an optimistic future for the Jewish people. And we do believe that we can look forward and say, yes, the continuity of Jewish tradition will be something that is strong and positive. If we don't believe in the future of our children, how do we think they will ever be able to believe in themselves? If we don't believe in them, it's impossible for them to believe in themselves. So there's amazing medrash that I once saw. Maybe I'm misinterpreting it, but I think it's something to consider. The pasuk says, we say it every Friday night in Kabbalah Shabbos, Moshe v'Aaron b'kohanav, u'Shmuel b'korei shemo. So the pasuk seems to equate Moshe, Aaron, and Shmuel. Well, Moshe and Aaron, we know many times in Chumash, are put together in one sentence. They're considered to be from the same family. They're considered to be two leaders who are of great proportion to the Jewish people at the time. But the Medrash is bothered. How did Shmuel get into the conversation? Moshe v'Aaron b'kohanav, how do you put Shmuel in the same sentence? He was a wonderful person, but he was no Moshe Rabbeinu. Well, says the Medrash, Moshe Aaron shevin ke'echad, and Shmuel is also on the same level as they. So the Medrash asks, how did such a thing happen? How did Shmuel become someone of the likes of Moshe Rabbeinu? How is it possible? Maybe this is my interpretation of the Medrash, but listen what the Medrash says. After I read the Medrash, you can tune out. Not accept it. But the Medrash says the following. I think there's something here. Bechol yom v'yom, every day, ha'isabaskol yotza u'mispotzetzes bechol ha'olam kulo ve'omeres. Every single day, there was a heavenly voice that came out and shared the following piece of information. Everybody heard it. Asid tzadik echad lamod u'shmo Shmuel. There's going to be a member of this generation who will be born. His name is going to be Shmuel. And he's going to be a great person. And upon hearing that, kal isha shahaisi yoled es bein, any woman who had a son, haisa motziya shmo Shmuel. Name their son Shmuel. Maybe it will be my kid. V'kivan shayiron es maisav, haya omer mzeh Shmuel. And as the kid was growing up, he said, you see, this is what God meant. Such a good kid. Look how he acts with his siblings. Look how he acts in school. Look how intense, kavana he has when he davens. He's only 10 years old. He finished all of Shas already. Look what he did. Amazing kid. This is the Shmuel that God was talking about. V'kivan shenolad zeh, ro'es maisav, omrim domesh azehu. Everybody really believed that their child was Shmuel. Ad kan divrei ha-medrash. And I think, if you raise a child in a generation where everybody around you believes, my child is going to be the leader, my child is going to be the greatest person in this generation, that's how a Shmuel is created. Because if we all believe in our children, somebody's child is going to be that leader. We raise the level for everyone's children if we actually believe fiercely in their future, in what they can do, in what they can accomplish. The Chasam Sofer, who was one of the greatest giants in the last few hundred years, they have a biography of the Chasam Sofer that's referred to as the Chut HaMeshulash. So he has a story in the Chut HaMeshulash, told over by the son of the Chassam Sofer. He says as follows. Narechad ben Shiva Asrei Ushmana Asrei Shana, he says, there was a young man, 17, 18 years old, he says, I don't remember. Vigilalo, he comes to my grandfather, the Chassam Sofer, and he says that he'd like to enroll in the yeshiva in Pressburg. That was known to be a top yeshiva in the generation. Chassam Sofer was the leader of the yeshiva. A young boy comes one day and says he wants to join. Uvishmo habachurim kein, everybody's watching this little 17-year-old kid, shows up to the yeshiva, really wants to come. He doesn't belong here. This is made for people who are very proficient, people who know so much Torah before they come here. So he says, when all the other students in the yeshiva saw this boy coming for his interview, sachku v'yaslu bo, they all ridiculed him, they made fun of him. Come on, this guy's going to join. He doesn't belong here. Eich bar shanim kamoso, how can a 17-year-old kid, asher lo ra ma'oros miyavam, he's never been exposed to all the things that we know, ritzono l'skoa atzma lilma gemar, he really thinks he's going to be successful here? He doesn't belong here. Ulam hachsam sofer gar bahem. When the Chassam Sofer heard what was going on, he screamed at his students. Lama ze titzchaku? He says, how dare you laugh at a kid? Halo kol harotza lilmod yavo v'yilmod. Do you think you have a monopoly on the Torah? You don't believe that a 17-year-old has a right to come into our school and learn how to study like the rest of us? Vayikr v'shanar, the Chassam Sofer said, this child is my child. Vitziva labachurim, he said, we're going to make rotations in our school now. Every single one of you has to dedicate an hour every day to study with this boy. And that's what he did. They made a rotation. Every single person switched off an hour to learn with this kid. Avol nosaf l'masha higia l'yudzayin shana. On top of the challenge that he was 17 and much younger than everybody else and far less educated, he had a terrible memory, he couldn't remember anything he was taught. And aside from that, he had difficulty understanding. So you had to have tremendous patience. You sat and learned with this kid. 17 years old, I'm 35. And you sit and learn with this little kid who doesn't even understand what you're saying and who can't remember a thing that you taught him. You come back the next day, you teach him the same thing. Achim lamdo imo eza mishnah mea pa'amim. They taught him a mishnah 100 times. 100 guys in a row taught him the same thing. Mehera shakha, you forgot it. Ulamachar haya be'enav kilu lo lamdo meyolam. The next day he came back like we never taught him anything. This is what the kid was. Amnam kein. This kid had a determination because my grandfather, the Chassam Sofer, believed in him. And he gave him the ability to be successful. And he writes that this young man, Berov Hayamim Higia Lamadregas Bachur Muflag Batorah, he became one of the most prominent students in the entire school. The Alav Hitzliach Vasa Pri Kodesh Hilulim Adshe Nismane Ledayin Umora Hora Beir Matisdorf. They accepted him to be the head of the Beis Din in Matisdorf. After that, he became the rabbi in the city of Shiling. I don't know what that is exactly. After that, he became also another very prominent position. V'huva kama pa'amim b'chassam sofer. Chassam Sofer in his tshuvas quotes this young student a number of times. Chassam Sofer is one of the most important books of literature that we rely upon in the last few 100 years. And this young man who nobody believed in, this young man who everybody laughed at, because the Chassam Sofer said, I see something positive. I see that he can be successful. I believe that he can become something. He actually became something. He became a prominent something. And the Chassam Sofer felt him worthy to be quoted in his own sfar. Lesson number one from the leadership of Shimon HaTzadik. You want to be a leader. You want to be a parent. You want to be an effective grandparent. As much as you might have some fears that lurk in the background, as much as you know the reality that life might be difficult going forward for your children or your grandchildren or whoever it is that you lead, you must give over a positive vibe and make them believe that you have full confidence in their ability to succeed and in their future. And at the moment that a person is completely overcome by the negativity, by the pessimism, that's the time when you realize my leadership is over. That's the time that Shimon HaTzadik says, I've done a great job 40 years, but get somebody else to take my place because it's not going to end well. I cannot lead if this is the feeling I'm giving over to my people. They will never succeed if the leader at the top makes them believe that they cannot succeed. Story number two. The Gemara has another story, also seeming to be a benign story, but there's an incredible lesson here as well. We don't have enough time to read it inside. Maybe we'll read a little bit. But the Gemara says a very unusual story. Look at line number 146. Mishamei Shimon HaTzadik. The Gemara says when Shimon HaTzadik died, Nimnu Echav HaKohanim Milevarech B'Shem. What that means is as follows. Every day in the Beis Hamikdash, they used to do Nesias Kapayim. The Kohanim used to stand up and give a blessing to the Jewish people. There's a major difference in the way it was done in the Beis Hamikdash and the way we do it traditionally today. Not the same at all. First of all, we don't do it every day as we're supposed to. Major question why we don't. The Svardim have a practice that they do Nesias Kapayim every day. In Eretz Yisrael, as we know, they do Nesias Kapayim every day. But here in America and in Chutz Laaretz, we generally do not. Major question, why not? Not for now. But there's a major difference in the way that we do the Nesias Kapayim in the Beis Hamikdash and the way it's done everywhere else. In the Beis Hamikdash, they used to say the Shem HaMeforesh, which was the long name of Hashem. When they used to do Nesias Kapayim, all the Kohanim said the real name of Hashem. In Chutz Laaretz, that is not the way it was done. In Chutz Laaretz, they said only what we refer to as a kinui. I don't know how you translate a kinui. It means a description. It's a not a nickname, because a nickname has a negative connotation. But we have many different ways in which we can refer to God. We don't refer to Him with His full name. We say Hashem, Elokeinu, different ways that are more of a dumbed down way to refer to the Ribono Shel Olam. Well, in the Beis Hamikdash, whenever they did Nesias Kapayim, they used to use the real Shem HaMeforesh. And when everyone says the Shem HaMeforesh, you have to bow down when you hear it. You have to say Baruch Shem. It's a whole procedure that needs to be done. It's much easier the way we do it. We say God's name very simply, not with the real name. Nobody's bowing down. Nobody's falling on the floor. Nobody has to say Baruch Shem. We just do it the easier way. Says the Gemara, all the years of Shimon HaTzadik's leadership, whenever they used to have Birchas Kohanim in the Beis HaMikdash, which was every day, they always used to say the Shem HaMeforesh as they were instructed to do. And it wasn't until Shimon HaTzadik died that the Kohanim said, enough of this. Let's just do it the easy way. Let's say the Kinui. Let's use God's name that doesn't require everyone to bow down on the floor and to say Baruch Shem. Let's just take the easy way out. Seder of Soloveitchik. Seder of Soloveitchik. Line 153. Shimon HaTzadik Shimon HaTzadik lo chas b'pnei kol. He was a fearless leader. Libo ha'ari lo nirta m'pnei ha'portzim sherebu. Hu birech ha'sa'am b'shem ha'mefurash af b'shah sh'shem ha'mefurash lo haya populari biyoter. Shimon HaTzadik used the name of God even when nobody wanted to hear the name of God. But he gave over the authentic and legitimate, genuine tradition exactly the way God's name is supposed to be represented. Seder of Soloveitchik, this is not just a story about did you say God's name or did you not? It's so much greater than that. It says what Shimon HaTzadik's leadership was all about. We don't change and adapt our principles just because it's not popular for the generation that we might live in. And yes, Shimon HaTzadik taught his generation, you don't like it? It's too bad. This is the tradition. This is what we do. And we do not adapt everything. We are not a subjective, moralistic religion. It doesn't change every generation based on what our social norms expect of us. We assume that the Torah is referred to as a Torah Hashem Temima. God's Torah is complete. God's Torah is perfect. And what that means is that it's perfect not only when it was given, but it's perfect for all future generations as well. And if that means it's going to make people uncomfortable, well, so be it. But the job of a leader is to give over the authentic and legitimate tradition with integrity and accuracy and to take the society out of the picture, to take the social expectations out of the equation. We have an obligation to transmit to our children the genuine tradition that was given to us. And it might not be in style sometimes, and it might be difficult. And we have to learn how to give it over to our children in an effective manner. I just spoke this past Shabbos in Los Angeles, and one of the things that I mentioned was a beautiful insight that was told to me by Rabbi Pelkowitz, Zichrona Levracha. And he said, the Gemara writes in Menachos Daf Chafhei, Kol HaKelim Sha'asa Moshe Rabbeinu, all of the items that Moshe Rabbeinu created for his functioning Mishkan, such as Menorah, Shulchan, Mizbeach, Aron, everything that Moshe Rabbeinu made, was able to be used not only by Moshe Rabbeinu and his generation, but also in subsequent generations. The same Mizbeach he used, we can use as well. The same Aron that he built, we have no problem using. The same menorah that he made, if we have it, we can use it as well. One exception, says the Gemara. One item that Moshe Rabbeinu made was only able to be used for him, and all future generations had to make their own. And what was that? Chatzotzros, the trumpets. Chatzotzros she'asa Moshe Rabbeinu, v'ksherim lo upsulim ledoros. They were able to be used by him, but no subsequent generation was able to use that which Moshe Rabbeinu made for his trumpet. Why is that? And Rabbi Pelkowitz said, perhaps the reason why is because the same tradition that we have in sacrificing karbanos on the Mizbeach is what we're going to do today as well. The same Aron and the same menorah that we light, all the mitzvahs that we do are the same way Moshe Rabbeinu did them. Nothing has changed. But you know what has changed and what absolutely needs to change? Is the mode of communication in which we give over those values to our children. The Chatzotzros were Moshe Rabbeinu's way of communicating with the people. And if you think that the mode of communication that Moshe Rabbeinu used in his generation is going to work for our kids, you have it all wrong. It's just not going to work. They don't speak that language anymore. It doesn't mean that we change the rules. It doesn't mean we change the understandings. It just means we change the mode of communication in which we need to give over these principles and these lessons and these messages to our children. That needs to be adapted in every generation based on the way that those generations communicate. And that, says Rav Soloveitchik, is the second incredible character trait that was the leadership of Shimon HaTzadik. Look at line 177. Kishameis ha'achron me'anshei Knesset ha'gedola. When the last one, the last holdout for old tradition, Shimon HaTzadik was the last one. When he died, Rabu ha'kohanim moge ha'lev. The kohanim became cowards. Sheyiru esam, they were afraid of the people. They weren't leaders anymore. Lo ratzu lamod keneged azarem. They didn't have the backbone to stand up strong to the tradition that they were supposed to uphold. Shehushbu ayidei ha'rechov. V'halalu hischilu lichvosh es nevuasam ulishtamesh bikinuyim hamotziim chein be'enei hahamon. They made a religion that was in style. They preferred a religion that was fashionable, not authentic. What they wanted was something that would speak to the people, and therefore they felt we have a right to adapt and we have a right to modify and change whatever it is that the community feels is necessary.
That was a reform
too? That is. This is why we do not accept it. It's exactly the point. And again, it comes from a good place. The concern of the reform was a proper concern. If we don't do something to modify the way we observe Shabbos, look how many people we're going to lose. Makes a lot of sense, right? Of course it makes sense. But the question is, at what cost? At what cost? This is the challenge of every generation. It's not just the reform hundreds of years ago, that when this movement started, this is a challenge that faces itself in every generation, and our generation has the same. We have our own challenges today. How much do we change? And how much do we say we have an obligation as leaders of our traditional community to make sure that we uphold and we communicate what the traditional method of service and observance is supposed to be? Seder of Soloveitchik, look at line 183. Rav Soloveitchik, Heiris Ozan Hashomim. He try to inspire the people to believe, ki hayadus be'America lo tira ve'lo techas. Don't be apologetic and don't be ashamed about the Judaism that you believe in. Lo timanami levarech ha'am b'shem ha'meforish. Don't ever modify the name of God. Don't ever feel that you need to adapt the name of God or revise it in any way. B'toras Hashem tamima ha'mekubelas midar ledar. We are here for thousands of generations and we're not going anywhere. And all of those other splintering movements that have started and have tried to make modifications are all almost gone. Just look at history. They have not succeeded. And it's a sad reality. But it's because the Torah is a Torah Hashem Temima. Because we believe that God gave us the perfect Torah. Nothing needs to be changed regardless of the generation that you might be living in. So Rav Soloveitchik, I just put here a few other things. Rav Soloveitchik had many discussions throughout his career about these kinds of issues. And one of the things that he writes is an important discussion about who has a right to be involved in halachic decisions. What are the qualifications to make a halachic decision that might be a novel one? And Rav Soloveitchik says he thinks there are three qualifications necessary. We're not going to go into all of them now. But let us just read line 253, and with this we'll close. The second qualification that he says is necessary is one must unconditionally accept the sacredness of the halacha in its eternal and absolute character. You need to believe that the halacha was meant not only for Moshe Rabbeinu, not only for generations past, but for our generation as well, and it's eternal and absolute. One must confess that it obligates everyone to realize its demands in all times and under all conditions, social, political, and cultural. One cannot be selective with regard to the halacha and say, this part pleases me, and the other does not. Lighting candles I will accept, but not the laws of family purity. Either one believes in the Torah min ha-shamayim and one accepts the halacha in its totality, or one does not believe in this basic principle and rejects it entirely. Halacha to be accepted only in part is impossible. Either you believe Torah Hashem Temima, or you don't. It's all from the same God. Either you accept it, or you don't. And you have a choice. If you don't accept it, well then you just don't accept anything. But if you do believe that this is the true religion, and you do believe that God gave us the authentic Torah as we study it and as we live it, then you believe in the entirety of Torah, and that nothing changes. Does that present challenges for members of our generation? Of course. Do I have difficulty explaining to members of our community the Torah's perspective on homosexuality? Yes. It's very difficult, and it's very countercultural. And how are we meant to explain to a person growing up in this generation that our Torah absolutely rejects this behavior? What are we supposed to do when in the world it's become so accepted? It is very difficult. But either you believe Torah Hashem Temima, and when God gave us the perfect and authentic Torah, it included even that, or you don't believe it. And if you don't believe it there, then you don't believe in anything. Because the Torah is one complete whole. And either you accept it all, or you reject it all. Rav Soloveitchik had another, I think, very beautiful example that really portrays this point very powerfully. And he says, we must remember that an ethical or halachic principle decreed by God is not rendered void by the fact that people refuse to abide by it. That doesn't make God null and void. And he gives an example. If the ethical norm, thou shalt not kill, right? We all know lo sirtzach. We all believe that's true. If that has not lost its validity during the days of extermination camps and gas chambers, when millions of people were engaged in ruthless murder, subjective morality should say that lo sirtzach no longer applies if you're living in Germany in the 1930s. But that's not the way the Torah works. You can have millions of people who have a belief, but we have a Torah Hashem Temima. And it makes no difference what millions of people might think or believe. If you believe that God gave us an authentic Torah, then that means that it's applicable to all generations. This was the leadership of Shimon HaTzadik. And if we walk away, we didn't even start to learn the Mishnah yet next week, but if we walk away with anything from learning this Mishnah, it is the two messages of leadership that every parent should learn from Shimon HaTzadik. Number one, Shimon HaTzadik was a fearless leader who never compromised who never was willing to change what the rule of the Torah was supposed to be in its most legitimate and authentic sense. That's number one. We need to learn how to communicate that to our children in the proper way that they can understand it. But we do not modify the Torah because millions of people around us think differently than the Torah's perspective. Number one. Number two, Shimon HaTzadik taught us that a leader is never able to give up on his people. If a leader does not believe in the positive future of his or her people, they can never be an effective leader. And it's always important, says Shimon HaTzadik, to see that old tradition that you represent as being one that is covered by a beautiful, white, clean, pristine future, as opposed to having a perspective of one which is a gloomy, cloudy, and dark future for your people. Shimon HaTzadik said, Ba'osa shana animes. This year I know I'm going to die, because he said, this year, if I cannot see anything positive in the future of the Jewish people, I am no longer worthy of serving as their representative. I am no longer able to be an effective leader and communicator as I should be. And said Shimon HaTzadik, as much as I may have accomplished in my service in the Beis HaMikdash, I see that my time is over. And that's the message for every parent, for every grandparent, for every leader, for anybody who feels that they're in a position where they can be influential to others, to always believe, like the Chassam Sofer did in that child, the 17-year-old who came to his school. Chassam Sofer said, I don't give up on children. I believe that they have the ability to accomplish great things, and I will invest in them having the ability to accomplish those great things that I see in them. So, Amir Tashem.